This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, How to Stop an Invasion. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. There is an invasion that happens inside of our heads in the form of intrusive thoughts. What are they? Where do they come from? And can we kick them out? Jad Slayman reports.
What's the absolute worst thought you've ever had?
I drove past some volleyball courts, and my first thought was, what if I threw razor blades in the sand?
Not great.
Sitting on a ledge with a friend, I thought, I could push them off and end their life right now and say they slipped.
These are from a Reddit thread where users shared their worst. Both are among the milder ones. It actually gets a lot worse.
I'm holding a newborn. What if I just threw it as hard as I could at the ground?
Noah Berman is a psychologist, and he's heard some version of these countless times. They're known as intrusions, and there's a bunch of them.
I'm talking like 50 to 80 different types of intrusions.
The thing about intrusions is, basically everyone has them, even if they don't share them online. Noah tells me about a recent study.
I think it was in 15 different cities, 13 different countries. An estimate of around 92 to 94% of people report these thoughts.
When Noah works with patients, he often goes through a checklist of intrusions to comfort people. A lot of them come in thinking they're some outlier, alone with their wild thoughts. The checklist shows they're common enough to, well, be on a checklist. Be honest, you've probably had one of these thoughts. Most of us just brush them away. But Noah treats people with obsessive compulsive disorder. For them, these intrusive thoughts often get them stuck in this loop.
The presence of these obsessions causes such an increase in anxiety or distress that it leads them to want to do something to make themselves feel better.
So they do some kind of ritual. Maybe it's mental, repeating the Lord's Prayer X number of times in your head. Sometimes physical, touch this doorknob just this way, this many times. And it brings a bit of relief.
But the more that you do that, it becomes a stronger and stronger process and more difficult to break.
These rituals can steal hours out of a patient's day. Noah breaks the cycle in what may seem like a counterintuitive way. A patient comes in chased by a thought. He says, it keeps flashing in my head. Stab mom. You're gonna stab mom. So Noah comes up with an assignment.
I'm gonna have them cut vegetables for dinner with their mom every day of the week while paying attention to their internal experience and not trying to push any of it away.
That's kind of basic exposure therapy. Put yourself in the feared situation, see that you come through it not a murderer. Noah's whole thing is making patients okay with these thoughts, but he can't exactly get rid of them. Some inner something still says stab mom, toss baby, whatever. So where does that voice come from? To try to answer that, we have to look into the strange world of inner speech. Charles Fernyhough has been researching this for years as part of a team at Durham University in the UK. He says it's very, very tricky trying to take stock of our own inner dialogue.
You have to sort of be attending to your own experience, and that fact that you're attending to your experience is probably going to mess up your experience.
It's like if I ask you, what are you thinking right now? You'll probably draw a blank. Just thinking about what you were just thinking changes what you think you were just thinking. Does your head hurt yet? Charles uses a beeper to train people to capture their thoughts better.
And you carry it around, it's attached to your belt, and it goes off randomly.
When it beeps, you write down what you were just thinking right before it went off.
And you get good at, over the course of a few days of working with this thing, you get pretty good at learning to describe your experience.
People get better at charting their own thoughts over time.
And watching that process unfold is really fascinating. You see people sort of come face to face with their own experience almost for the first time.
Charles and his team are among the few researchers who are doing the basic science of inner speech. They've found it's very different from what we say out loud. It does, though, probably start with spoken speech.
It starts as social speech, and over time, over childhood, it becomes internalized. It's a developmental process.
Before inner speech, you get private speech.
So you see children talking to themselves, but out loud, in a way that you and I might talk to ourselves silently in our heads. That's a stage known as private speech.
Charles says as the early private speech becomes internalized, it changes, becomes increasingly personalized.
If I were able to stick a microphone into your brain and somehow, you know, miraculously pick up on your inner speech, a lot of the time, I think I wouldn't understand it.
A lot of it becomes a kind of shorthand that you create for yourself.
Just like if I picked up your notebook and tried to make sense of it, I wouldn't have a clue. Because you're writing notes to yourself. You're writing information for yourself where you already know half the story because it's you. It's you speaking.
And partly because of that, inner speech is also super fast.
Probably most of our inner speech is highly compressed, highly condensed. And that actually chimes with a little bit of research suggesting that we talk to ourselves much faster than we can speak out loud.
Charles says research shows our inner speech is maybe 10 times faster than anything we could hope to say out loud. And it's not just one really sped up track. It's multiple, all going at once. Like maybe a subject is thinking about their next vacation at the same time as they notice a tear in the wallpaper.
And they're both going on at the same time. It's not that they're flipping between them. They seem to both be in their experience at the same time.
It's not always talking or, so to speak, a voice. There's also inner seeing, imagining or picturing something, inner feeling like happiness, anger, sensory, like the carpet is soft, and a last weird one called unsymbolized thinking.
Well, it's like if you had a thought,
It's hard to describe, like a ghost of a thought. It's there, but you don't capture it in language or images.
There's no language involved. You couldn't pin down any of the words, but the thought is there.
And this weird space without language or anything, Charles has a hunch that's where a lot of intrusive thoughts start.
You might just have a completely abstract thought about dropping the baby that doesn't come in words, that doesn't have any visual imagery, doesn't have any sensations, doesn't have any emotions attached.
In the absence of really knowing where these thoughts come from or why, Charles says just don't assign too much weight to them. Like most of us, he's able to just let the bad thoughts go.
That my brain is just this kind of factory chucking out stuff. You know, it's constantly on the go, and a lot of what it chucks out is absolute rubbish. A lot of what it chucks out is really nothing to do with me.
That last point is something another psychologist drives home in his practice. Fred Penzel is the executive director of Western Suffolk Psychological Services in New York State.
We do not consider the content of obsessive thoughts to be significant. In other words, we don't analyze what they mean.
He doesn't even care what your particular intrusive thought is.
We don't try to figure out where they came from. We just accept that people get whatever they get. There's no rhyme or reason.
Researchers know there's some neurochemical basis for intrusive thoughts because certain antidepressants seem to alleviate them, but a lot of it is still a mystery. What's clear, though, is even though these thoughts come from somewhere deep inside your head, they don't say anything about who you are or what you're capable of. For The Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.